I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Bernie Sanders made a number of campaign stops in Philadelphia yesterday and today. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that his speech to unions this morning was toned down compared to last night.
At Temple University's Lea Corus Center last night, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders opened fire on Hillary Clinton. He said she's unfit to be the next president for a list of reasons, from taking campaign contributions from Wall Street to voting for the war in Iraq when she was in the Senate.
I don't think you are qualified if you have supported virtually every disastrous trade agreement which has cost us millions of decent-paying jobs.
At the AFL-CIO convention, Sanders was not on the attack. Instead, he spoke a language that was music to the ears of labor unions, including calling for an easing of the regulations to approve a union in a business.
Which will make it easier, not harder, for working people to join unions. 50% plus one in a bargaining union signs a card, we've got a union.
The speech excited many union members, including influential Electricians Local 98 head John Dougherty, who says Democrats have two good candidates.
We're finally back in a position where people understand. I mean, it's no longer just a rumor. The facts are that without a union, you don't have a middle class. Okay? There's nothing they're talking about that isn't us, the labor movement, the Philadelphia Building Trades, the AFL-CIO. It's us. They're talking about us.
Dougherty says he's already speaking with younger Sanders supporters about coming to help with the Clinton campaign if the former Secretary of State is the nominee. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Former President Bill Clinton made a stop at a rec center in Mount Airy today to stump for his wife, Hillary. But as WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, protesters managed to hijack the event by questioning him on his legacy on criminal justice.
It didn't take long for protester Erica Mines to yell down Bill Clinton about his time in the White House.
Oh! Now, wait a minute, wait a minute. Now you're screaming.
Clinton then put aside his Hillary pitch and began responding to each and every protest sign. He was most passionate when talking about his tough-on-crime policies that critics say balloon the country's prison population.
I talked to a lot of African-American groups. They thought Black Lives mattered. They said, take this bill because our kids are being shot in the street by gangs. We had 13-year-old kids planning their own funerals.
Mines later elaborated that she interrupted the former president because Hillary Clinton has been trying hard to court black voters.
But she also called the black youth super predators at one point. She also is for the death penalty. You cannot be against police brutality and for the death penalty at the same time. That is a contradiction. She does not deserve the black vote at all.
Melissa Ingram was standing next to Mines at the rally and thought her attack wasn't very productive.
I even came to her and said, sis, we hear you, but don't act ignorant.
A sentiment of courtesy shared by other black Philadelphians at the event. Ty Jenkins Sr. says he came after losing faith in Bernie Sanders following negative attack ads. As if speaking to the Vermont senator,
now you're getting off track. Now you're starting to lose people like me. You're losing me. I was there for you, man. I mean, it's getting to the point now, the disrespect and disdain coming from your campaign and your supporters is so bad, and to the point where you would say that our Secretary of State isn't qualified to be president.
As Bill Clinton left the event, Melvin Barnes watched him wave at fans crowded all around. Barnes lives right across the street from the rec center. His only wish for 2016? That Bill Clinton was running.
I always loved Bill Clinton when he was president. They loved Bill Clinton. If he had ran for a third term, he would have made it.
For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
New Jersey's assembly leader believes the state can help Atlantic City deal with its financial crisis without a state takeover. WHYY's Phil Gregory reports.
An assembly committee has advanced a bill proposed by Speaker Vinnie Prieto to give city officials a year to meet benchmarks before the state could dissolve municipal departments or sell assets. It would be 2 years before collective bargaining agreements could be terminated to cut costs. Mayor Don Guardian says Prieto's bill is fair.
This is a plan that we absolutely can live with. This makes a lot of sense. I think we need to work on the governor and say, come on, give us a chance. We want to help ourselves.
Governor Chris Christie says Prieto's plan is ineffective.
It is not a solution to the problem. It creates more bureaucracy, more delay.
There's no indication that the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor will be able to reach some sort of a compromise. Meanwhile, Atlantic City moves closer to running out of money. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Phil Gregory, WHYY News.
Still ahead, Jen Miller had a casual relationship with running, but when her actual relationships went south, the sport stepped in to help out.
Your brain blanks out, and sometimes it keeps blanking out, and you think of really stupid stuff. Or it helps you solve problems that you were trying not to think about directly, or things that you couldn't solve by bashing your head against the wall.
We'll go through the paces when NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. A few weeks back, the severed head of a cow was found lying in the courtyard of a cow sanctuary near Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. The sanctuary, owned and run by Dr. Shankar Sastry, is a retired New York City professor. It's a place where aged bulls and cows can live out their lives peacefully. Concerned Hindus from all over the region recently met with a representative from the Department of Justice about what's being investigated as a hate crime. Rama Reddy Raghavan reports.
The Lakshmi Cow Sanctuary in the foothills of the Poconos is a 90-acre safe haven for about 20 bovines. It's home to Texas Longhorns, Dutch Holsteins, and Brahma bulls from India. The sanctuary was founded by Dr. Shankar Sastry, an animal lover who, like many Hindus, believe that the cow is sacred.
The most loving and compassionate being in the universe is the cow. And as Aurobindo said, if you look at the eyes of the cow, it's like 1,000 divine mothers looking at you with love and compassion. Four means go in Tamil.
The cows have Hindu and Buddhist names like Krishna, Sita, Vedanta, and Kyoho. In late March, Catherine Davis, during the morning feed, found the severed cow head.
Some of the cows had gotten out, and we were trying to get them back in on that other side of the street there. And then we were just walking over by the edge of the driveway and, you know, just stumbled on it. You know, it was sitting there for a while. We didn't notice. So it was very strange.
Davis told Sastry, who immediately called 911. The state trooper who responded initially wondered if the cow was left there to be disposed of.
That's when I explained to her, no, we are taking care of the cows. We don't kill any cows here. We are a cow sanctuary. Then when she realized that, she called her corporal. And who said that it may be a hate crime?
Police say three bullets from a .44 caliber handgun were found in the animal's head. The cow was not from the sanctuary. Neighbors hearing of the incident stopped by to offer fruit baskets and flowers. One of them, Clarence Dietrich, can't believe anyone would do this.
I thought it was a bad joke or bad something like that. I'm sure that nobody would want to do any harm to the cows up there.
He says there are fewer and fewer people raising or keeping livestock, so the sanctuary is a welcome presence.
Like I said, everybody that I talk to, everything, they enjoy going by and seeing the cattle and everything, you know. I mean, they don't usually see that much in Monroe County anymore. I mean, there's a lot of farms that went out.
So far, phone calls to the state police have gone unreturned, and Sastry says he has no clue as to who could have committed this act. For the last 16 years, when the sanctuary was in its previous location, nothing like this ever happened. Sastry recently noticed a Ku Klux Klan poster in one neighbor's window, which made him wonder if there's a connection.
But then his mother stopped by and said that, you know, she loved the cows, and they asked her about their house. She said, oh, my son lives there. She said that he doesn't mean it. He doesn't mean in any way to harm anybody. He just put it there so that people won't bother him. So many people come with dirt bikes and ATVs. And that's kind of damaging, you know, that is why he did this.
Representatives of the Hindu American Foundation, an advocacy group to foster the understanding of Hinduism in this country, met last week with Suzanne Buchanan. Her title with the Department of Justice is Conciliation Specialist. Buchanan is offering to work as a facilitator in future conversations with the police and local residents unfamiliar with Hinduism. Within 10 miles of the sanctuary, there are two Hindu temples. There's also Arsha Vidya, an institute that offers classes in Indian disciplines such as yoga, Sanskrit, and philosophy. Janet Falk, who works there, was encouraged after meeting with Buchanan.
people are going to have their eyes opened somewhat, which would be wonderful. It's a very conservative community in which we live.
Going forward, Shastri is positive.
Hopefully, you know, we will have a meeting with the Department of Justice and FBI and the state police chief and local police to see how we can monitor the situation, and also meet with the community leaders and then spread the awareness of love and compassion. And hopefully we can transform this into a loving and compassionate community.
You know, if you go to feed the cows, you just put it in front of them.
The Hindu community is now planning an annual walk and a prayer vigil at the cow sanctuary to raise awareness. But for the time being, Shastri has installed security cameras. For WHYY, I am Rama Reddy Raghavan.
That is Durga.
Running, it's an obsession for some and a mystery for others. It's painful for beginners, and it hurts more as you get better and increase your distance. It's only when you reach a high level of proficiency that you start to get some pleasure from the pursuit. That progression took a decade for freelance journalist Jen Miller, author of the book Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and One Life-Changing Sport, out this month. Our producer, Shai Ben-Yaakov, reports that she traces her relationship with running through her romantic relationships.
Jen Miller wasn't always a runner. In fact, she detested running as a kid. But there was this guy back in high school.
He was a spectacular athlete in another sport, but wanted to get in better shape. And so he said, I'm going to join the cross-country team. I'm like, why? And he would just go and do this weird thing. And I'd be like, okay, bye.
That childhood infatuation ended when both of them went to college, and Jen was still no runner. Years later,
I was the editor of a local magazine at the time, and I would have to go to a lot of events for that.
And at one event, she met a guy named Steven.
We just kept running into each other. He was significantly older than me. He was just, you know, this gorgeous person, and I was this 23-year-old. And you know, we got closer and we became really good friends. And I learned that his father was an alcoholic and that he himself had said he had had issues with it, but he had it under control sort of thing. Or, you know, he never drank in front of me. And he just was like acting like the big brother to me. And one night I was out in Old City, Philadelphia, and I had a cell phone finally. And he called and said, I fell off the wagon. Where are you? And that sort of led into this terrible sort of on-again, off-again relationship that was, you know, looking back on it now, I would tell any of my friends to run as far away as you possibly can.
Steven pressured Jen into working out, getting fit. It was an unhealthy kind of pressure, shaping her body into the one he wanted her to have.
So when I got a magazine assignment to run my first 5K, I thought this was this really great thing I could do, like it's something that we shared. And maybe it would get me to be in better shape, because it was always about being in better shape. I mean, there's...
To him, it was always about
being in better shape. It was one thing for him, but he would, like, compare me to other women.
Partly because she wanted to win those comparisons, and partly because she wanted a bit of a challenge, Jen trained for and ran her first 5K for that magazine assignment.
I pitched the magazine story because it was fitness challenges. Like, I'm going to go do this crazy fitness thing. And at the time, online running coaches weren't a thing. I mean, they were a thing, but they were brand new. So I pitched the story as, I hate running. I'm going to run, but I'm going to do it within this newfangled online running coach way. And they bought it.
And if I remember right, your final time in that 5K, when you brought it back to the magazine, it was 22:12, which they said was actually too fast. They didn't want you to publicize that.
Right. 22:12 for an amateur runner, it's not bad. I mean, it was fast enough that I won third in my age group, and I got a mug for it and a gift certificate to a place called Macho Taco that no longer exists.
But the taco costs like more than the gift certificate, right?
The taco costs $1 more than the gift certificate. It was a total ploy.
but that's fine.
At the same time Jen was having her first success at running, her dysfunctional relationship with Stephen ended. It was a good time for running to serve as therapy.
I had learned about the Ocean Drive 10-miler, and it was a race that started in front of my favorite hotel and ended on the boardwalk in Wildwood, and it was 10 miles long. And I'm like, that's it. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
And so you started to train for that.
Mm-hmm.
And how did, what was that training like?
It was not those short, fast runs or just short runs. I mean, I was spending like 30, 40, 50 minutes, an hour with myself. And then it just, you know, it became what I run for now, which is sort of this brain clearing where you just, your brain blanks out. And sometimes it keeps blanking out and you think of really stupid stuff. Or it helps you solve problems that you were trying not to think about directly, or things that you couldn't solve by bashing your head against the wall. It just sort of pops out.
After that, she met another guy, Jason.
He was used to running shorter distances, had never run a long distance race, and asked me if I wanted to run with him one day. And instead, I asked him to an LL Cool J concert.
You guys ran together, I mean, through a lot of that relationship, right?
We did. We would run together. Sometimes he would run more after and run very, 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 very fast. but generally, we would do like our weekend-long runs together.
Okay. And how did – so at this point, how did running feel to you?
Running had started to become something that was part of my life. I got used to it, and I thought 10 miles, that's far enough. Like 10 miles is far enough. And I had been – finding the more that I raced and the more that I ran in groups that I was faster than a lot of people. I wasn't fast, but I thought maybe I could be one of those faster runners at every race sort of thing.
10 miles wasn't enough. Jen went on to run 5 marathons. She's running her next one at the beginning of May. Though the relationships that marked her progression through the sport have fallen away, Jen's relationship with running is still alive and well.
I hope to be able to run until the day I die.
I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov, WHYY News.
Shai Ben-Yaakov is also host and producer of the new podcast, The Playground, coming later this year. You'll be able to hear much more of Jen's story in an upcoming episode. The Philadelphia Orchestra has announced a roster of programs to promote education and community access to music. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Kearns reports on the orchestra's renewed efforts to be an orchestra for the people.
The Philadelphia Orchestra has taken a page from socially conscious companies, like, for example, Warby Parker, that eyeglass manufacturer that gives a pair of glasses to a person in need for every pair you buy. The orchestra has partnered with the Eastman Music Company, which has been consulting with the musicians on a new line of instruments. The orchestra's director of collaborative learning, Dan Berkowitz, says for every instrument sold in stores, another will be given to the Philadelphia School District, where the students now have to make do with several hundred broken instruments.
Together, we're going to have a large impact on this public school narrative and to ensure that these instruments getting into their hands are of high quality, because there's no bigger barrier to learning music than to having an instrument that doesn't function.
The Buy One, Give One instrument program is one part of the orchestra's newly restructured learning and engagement umbrella called HEAR, or H-E-A-R. That stands for Health, Education, Access, and Research. Another effort involves music therapy with homeless people in collaboration with Temple University and the Broad Street Ministry. CEO Allison Volgamore says the orchestra wants to do what it can to help alleviate the city's problems concerning poverty, wellness, and education.
There are some extraordinary statistics about living in our city, and I think what the orchestra has decided, this is important work for an orchestra. It's not just great concerts, but it in fact is being present with people where they are.
Volgamore also says the orchestra has become more active in the All-City Orchestra. That's an ensemble of teenagers throughout the public school system. The orchestra will provide rehearsal time and performance venues for that student orchestra, as well as access to music director Yannick Nezet-Sagan. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production today from Brett Ever-Ready Raider. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.